Welcome to Writers on Writing on 88.9 KUCI FM. We are broadcasting from the University of California, Irvine campus, and on the web at kuci.org. I'm Barbara DeMarco Barrett. Writers on Writing features authors, editors, poets, and literary agents discussing the art and the business of writing. And today we have a literary agent who will be on, Julie Castiglia. Julie has placed many significant fiction and nonfiction titles. Several of these have won awards and appeared on the New York Times most notable list. Among the agency's clients are Temin Ansari, West of Kabul, East of New York, published by Farrar, Straus & Giroux; The God Gene, published by Doubleday in 2004, and Fat Is Not Your Fate by Simon & Schuster this past January. 2003 marked the Castiglia Agency's 10th year anniversary, and they handle serious nonfiction, self-help, literary, and commercial fiction, and it's located in Southern California, actually, Del Mar. Hi, Julie.
Hi, Barbara.
Thanks for coming on again. It's been, what, a couple years?
Yes, I think so. Time flies when you're having fun.
So tell me what is going on with you in terms of what you see happening with publishing and what you find is selling, what's more difficult to sell, what's happening?
Well, the industry it's like movies. They have trends, and they just buy and buy and buy this one trend until everybody gets fed up with it, and then they go on to something else. But the problem is when somebody comes to me and asks me what to write or what the trend is, it's already too late. So
right.
It goes, you know, this chick lit thing has been going on for a while now, so they're trying to make it a little bit more diverse. But it's still, you know, it's still pretty strong out there as far as fiction is concerned. But, you know, a really good, anything very well written will always be published. I mean, if it's brilliantly written, it's going to get some notice. So I always tell people, forget about the trends and just write.
Do you find that, are writers, especially new writers, really concerned with trends and with trying to make sure they're sort of in on it?
Yeah, a lot of people just want to know what to write. They think that they can just write something that a publisher wants, but that's really not the way to write. The way to write is to write for your passion, you know, and something you really know about and you feel about deeply, because just trying to dash off a novel because it's trendy, I just don't think that's the way to do it.
That's interesting, because, I mean, I guess what I'm trying to say is you would think that if you have a passion for writing, that there's just something you need to write, and the trends don't quite matter.
I think that's true. They don't. But, you know, if you're 20 or 25 and you've got a lot of experience with dating or with whatever, and it's really something that you want to write about, and you have an unusual kind of a job or you're an unusual type of a person, then, yeah, you could probably write a chick lit book. I just sold an unusual kind of a chick lit book. It was a Latina vampire chick lit.
Oh, my goodness.
So that was interesting, and I had an auction, and so she got really good money for it. So it's just interesting what can happen and how it happens. But I don't go out and look for chick lits. I mean, I'm just looking for a good writer.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly that's what we look for. We look for really good writing with a unique voice and a story to tell. That's what you're always looking for.
Where do the clients come from? Where do your clients come from? Is it mostly referral? Do you meet clients at conferences?
A lot of referral. Sometimes we go after people if we see something somewhere that we think would make a good story. And then a lot of people just come to us because, you know, I've been around for so long that people know who I am and they've heard of me. And, you know, we get hundreds and hundreds of submissions. It's just amazing how much keeps coming.
Now, how many submissions do you get a week?
Oh, 200.
200. Mm-hmm. And then how many of those are viable? Do you want to see a proposal or a manuscript?
Probably, well, I used to say 1%, but that's probably it. About 1% of those that come in, you might find one or two.
Hmm. And do you get more fiction in or nonfiction?
Probably more fiction. But fiction these days, you know, I mean, nonfiction, you have to have really, really good credentials or you can't sell it. The person has to have expertise. So I tell people who are new at writing and really want to write nonfiction and have had experience in newspapers and magazines and they want to write a book, to team up with an expert. That's the best way to get published with your first book, I think.
Hmm. And is that a good credit in terms of when you go on to sell your second book?
Because it's your name on the book. That's what you have to have, your name on the book. And you're the writer, so if you go on to write another book that is nonfiction, and you always have to have an expertise, though, with nonfiction. So if you don't have any, you really do have to team up with somebody who has, you know, really, really good credentials in the subject you're writing.
What about ghostwriting? Is that sort of just a bread and butter type of thing? Do you ever recommend it or pair people up?
Well, I don't recommend it unless you really want to do it, because you'll never get known. But if it doesn't matter to you and you're just trying to make a buck and write, mm-hmm. then you can ghostwrite. I do have people who have done that, but usually that's their practice. They really want to get out there and get their name on a cover.
Hmm. You're listening to Writers on Writing. I'm with Julie Castilla. She's a literary agent in Southern California. Are most of your clients out here, or are they all over?
No, I hardly have any out here.
Interesting.
I have England, New Zealand, South Africa, and New York. Mm. And I do have a couple out here. I have a new client out here, and a lot of people in just other states.
Do you think it's a myth that if you that you need to have an agent who's in New York, or you have to have an agent who lives near you?
Well, if that were true, all of the agents out of New York wouldn't be making money, and they are. So I don't think that has got any truth in it anymore. Maybe it used to have years and years ago, but it really doesn't matter where you are. If you have a good project, you can sell it. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter, you know, people would think that you need to go to New York. Well, you know, I have sold things when I've been in New York, but quite honestly, I sell a lot more just being here than when I'm in New York. So I don't see, you know, I don't see any difference at all. I mean, some of the most successful agents are right here in Southern California.
Sure. Well, in terms of being here, as opposed to, say, being in New York, what about shopping clients' novels as movie options in Hollywood? I mean, the industry is nearby. Is that something that you do, or is that something
that you team
up with another agent?
I do, but I always use Hollywood agents for that, because that's a whole different, you know, industry. And, you really have to know people. So I have some really good, one in particular that I use a lot, and others that I've used, and you know, they're in the know, they've been around for years, and a lot of times they call me, they've seen a review of one of my books, and they ask me to send it to them.
Mm-hmm.
That's what happened lately. I have a new book out called Born to Rule about Queen Victoria's granddaughters, and an agent got in touch with me about that, and actually, he's really going to do well with that because of all the new young stars. You know, there could be 5 young stars in that movie with all these granddaughters.
Sure.
So,
well, what about galleys? Do galleys often sell before they're even out as books? Do they sell to Hollywood?
Oh, yeah. Definitely. Even manuscripts sell.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, usually it's got to be somebody who's well-known if it's a manuscript, but if you've got a really hot manuscript and it just seems very visual and you can just see it as a movie, then yes, I would send it to people I know there for sure.
Hmm. Interesting. What about reviews? This is something that is, I think, that fascinates me continually, actually, because you hear so much about reviews in Publishers Weekly or you know, Booklist or Kirkus being just so important to the life of your book, or to at least giving it a burst of energy in the beginning. Are those publications still, do they still mean what they used to mean now that there's so many?
I'm not sure, because I think almost every book that I've sold has been reviewed by Kirkus and Publishers Weekly. But, I mean, some of them do really well and some of them don't. I don't know that the reviews, even if it's a rave review, I don't know how much clout they have. I mean, it's nice because the movie people look at those reviews, and that's how they get to call you for a, you know, to look at books. But I don't know. I really can't say what makes a bestseller. If we knew what made a bestseller, we'd all be doing it, and nobody really knows. I personally believe it's word of mouth more than anything, just like a movie. But, you know, movies can get terrible reviews, but if the word of mouth is, oh, God, I love that movie, you've got to go see it, then a lot of people go see it. So it doesn't matter about the review. But I think the same is in the publishing industry, pretty much. Anything is good. I mean, you know, you don't want bad reviews, so good reviews always help, and maybe it helps to get on the bestseller list because maybe the independents see the reviews and go out and get the book. Maybe they didn't know about it. I really don't know how much it makes a difference, quite honestly.
Hmm. I also wonder about all of the online venues. You know, there's a million online publications that never see print, that are so geared to books and to readers that, you know, you wonder, on the one hand, how does anybody ever have time to read all of them? And on the other hand, you know, a lot of them tend to promote more, in terms of fiction, perhaps more literary fiction. And I wonder, again, you know, how they do.
Well, I think young people definitely go online. I think that's the future, where, you know, because that's what they've grown up with is computers, and I think that more and more that will become really important. I still think for people who didn't grow up with it, it's still something that they don't want to be bothered with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you go on the web, you think it's going to be quick and takes forever and kicks you off, and you go back on and you try. I don't know. I find it really annoying sometimes, but I think that the younger people, I think it will become more and more important. That's the only thing I can say about that.
Along those same lines, then, what about ebooks? A couple of years ago, we were hearing an awful lot about ebooks, or the future of the book made of paper, and how it was, you know, one day we wouldn't have it anymore.
I know, and I never believed it, and I think it was true that people like to buy books. They like to hold books. They like to put them in their, you know, on their bookshelves. And I really don't know if that will ever go away. But as I said, with the kids growing up, you know, 7-year-olds can do things on the computer that we don't even know about. So
mm-hmm.
I think that as it becomes more and more part of life, maybe that will. I don't think we're going to see it. I really don't. I think that it's a long way down the road. And all the times they've tried to make it work, I remember one editor from Warner telling me she was so excited. She was not going to be an editorial anymore. She was just going to be doing the computer stuff and the e-books and the this and that. Well, a year later, she was back in editorial. So that's the way I've seen it happen.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen all these things that they said would happen not happen.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. That's the thing that we're going to have to see. What
are there different expectations for fiction as opposed to nonfiction? And what I mean is, when a novel comes out, say in hardcover, apparently it stays in the bookstore, you know, a few months, and then whatever doesn't sell is sent back. Whereas nonfiction, at least it seems like it stays on the shelf more. Now, maybe because it's trade paperbacks and there's more room, but, you know, can you talk about that just in terms of the differences
well,
between fiction and
nonfiction?
Well, I
think that it's the individual book. I mean, I know that mass market books don't have a very long shelf life. I mean, 2 to 3 weeks and they're out of there usually. But trade paperback is both fiction and nonfiction, so I don't think that would make the difference, but I just think it's the book itself. I mean, I've seen books that I've sold for lots and lots and lots of money do nothing. And I've seen books that I've sold for not much money do very well. And I still say that it's just the luck of the draw. I mean, it's just, you can judge a little bit, like, you know, you look at a book and say, a lot of people are going to buy this book. And because you just know it, and usually that is the case. But sometimes you sell a book, and the publishing house thinks, or they wouldn't be paying all this money for it. They think it's going to have a great, you know, it's going to sell in great numbers, and it doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know why. And that's what I said before. If we knew what made a book sell, we'd all be doing it.
Yeah. Yeah.
The trouble is, though, once you sell a book, once I sell a book to an editor who's really enthusiastic about it, it kind of falls into a hole. I mean, she's on to her next books. You know, she's edited this book, and so she's looking at all the other books she's got to do. Editors are way too busy. And then what's happening to this book that I sold? Well, you know, it's going down the production line and getting a cover and being produced. But then by the time it gets out, people, you know, the publishing company is so on to the new books, it's kind of fallen into a wasteland. And that's my beef with the publishing company. I mean, I don't know what else they could do, but a lot of books just get lost along the way, and they don't get the attention they deserve. And I think that's what happens to a lot of books.
You would think that when a publishing company is not planning to put a lot of money into the publicity of a book, that early on they would advise the author to do so. And often there's really no information coming forth from publishers, you know,
people they should hire a publicist. I tell them that right off, that the publisher is going to help you out maybe if you're lucky for a couple of weeks. And after that, you're on your own. And you should have a publicist. And if you should put some of your advance into getting a publicist, because if you don't, then the publishing company has already moved on.
Mm-hmm.
And if it doesn't get on the bestseller list, and if it isn't selling really, really well, they just ignore it. They only pay attention to the books that are selling thousands and thousands, and they'll throw in money after good, but they won't put in money after bad. So if the book is not selling, they're not going to do anything to help it. So then it's up to the author.
Yeah, but selling well, what does that mean? A book doesn't make the bestseller list, say, but it it's, you know, garnering steady sales. It's moving. But what exactly is defined as well?
Well, I would say if, you know, you have a kind of an ordinary book and it's, say, nonfiction, and if you've sold 30,000 in the first year, I would say that's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Even 20,000 isn't bad. What's
right.
bad is 8,000.
In a year.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's, you know, anything, say, over 30, and if it keeps going, you know, it's really good. I mean, I sold a book in 1994, and it still sells mm-hmm. way over 30,000 a year. I mean, it's already sold almost 1 million copies, and that never, well, it did get on a few bestsellers, but it didn't ever get on the New York Times. But a lot of books sell more than the books on the New York Times bestseller list. It's just that New York Times bestseller list only gets their information from certain stores. So that's why it's not really fair. Probably the USA Today one is more fair.
Why is that?
Because they get their numbers from other places, and I'm not quite sure exactly where they get them, but mm-hmm. I know it's more fair than just having a few stores that nobody knows what those stores are. And the New York Times get their numbers from those stores, and I don't think that's really fair.
Mm-hmm. So, a couple of minutes ago, you said you sold a book in '94, and it's gone on to sell maybe 1 million copies since then. What do you attribute that to? Does the author continue to do work to promote it? Was word of mouth happening?
No, that's word of mouth. What happened is, it did get on the Business Week bestseller list. This is nonfiction. And it had a great title. Actually, I gave it the title it had. But then it just was word of mouth. I mean, people talked about it. And so she does actually do quite a bit of speaking. So that probably helped it, too. I mean, she does have seminars that she runs and things like that. So that probably helps it a lot. I think that probably helps more than anything, if you can either get on a speaking circuit or have a speaking agent, you know, a speaker's agent, or just get out there. Just expose the book as much as you can, because, again, more people who read it, more people who, you know, tell other people about it, you're going to sell more copies.
In doing events, can you talk about what you think works best? I mean, there's a lot of discouraging news about doing book signings, and that if you're going to do anything, you should do some sort of book event where you're doing a workshop, whether it's fiction or nonfiction.
Well, that's a very good idea, I think. Workshops are great. And the learning annex, you know, you can do things on, you know, have little things going like that. I mean, there's a lot of things that you can do to give the book exposure, but I think giving talks and presentations any way you can, especially if it's nonfiction, that's probably the way to get a lot of sales.
What if it is fiction? What can authors do to promote their novels if it's fiction?
Fiction's harder, but I think you can do readings. I mean, there are places where you can, especially if it's a literary novel, you can do readings. And Simon and Schuster, for their Chick Lit books, they have they kind of throw a big party. I don't know if it's once a month, but they invite a lot of women and give away some of these books. So that's a great way for them to promote a lot of books at one time. And if women could get together, if you've written a book that women would like, and you know some other authors, that would be a great way to do it. Just have a party every mm-hmm. once in a while, you know, and read from your books and have a stash there to sell, and you know, things like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are ways of doing it, but the trouble is, you see, most authors are not that outgoing. I mean, that's probably why they write, so they find the marketing part of it very difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And I can understand that.
Well, we have more to talk about, so we're going to take a really short break. We will be right back with more Julie Castiglia. Please stay tuned. Thank you.
Come back, baby, please don't go. No, I love you, darling, hate to see you go. Come back, baby, let's talk it over one more time. My heart's full of sorrow, mama aching tears. Be gone 24 hours, child, seem like a thousand years. Come back, baby, let's talk it over one more time. Darling, Rome wasn't built in a day. Let's talk it over before you go away. Come back, baby, let's talk it over one more time.
And welcome back to Writers on Writing on 88.9 KUCI FM. We're broadcasting from the University of California, Irvine campus and on the web at kuci.org. At least I hope we're on the web. Sometimes we have some server difficulties, so I hope we're there. My guest today is literary agent Julie Castiglia, but before we bring her back on, let me say that the opinions and views that you hear on this show are those of me and my guest, and not those of the University of California, Irvine Regents. Hi there.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Okay. Now, we were talking about promotion and how novelists tend to have a harder time with it because, you know, for the most part, writers tend to be more introverted. And, you know, marketing can take up an awful lot of time, so that when do you do the writing? You know, it's really kind of I think it can become a conflict for people.
I agree. It's a difficult thing. And maybe in days gone by, you didn't have to promote like you do now, but seems to be a necessary thing. But I think it is very difficult, especially for fiction writers. And most of them don't have a clue, you know, what to do. So, first of all, if you're sent on tour, that's good. But, I mean, sometimes they can't get you any gigs. So, I mean, you see people on the Today Show who have written novels. And, you know, Oprah used to promote them, which used to really project them into the universe.
Right.
But she doesn't do that anymore. But that's the only ways that people really know to really get very high sales. But I suppose you could be very creative and think up something that wouldn't take a lot of time and have a lot of people, you know, come and listen to you.
You know, mystery writers and romance writers tend to have more of a network happening. I mean, mystery bookstores really seem to promote their authors, and there's so many, say, Romance Writers of America chapters that
right.
really seem to also promote their authors. But for, say, literary fiction, there doesn't seem to be much.
No, there's not that network like you have with those genre groups, and it's very nice for them because it's almost like a big family. You
mm-hmm.
know, they have these conferences and they have mystery nights where they do, you know, they act out. I mean, it's probably terrific for them, but for literary writers, there really isn't anything. You just hope that you, usually, hopefully, you've written in a lot of literary magazines before you write a novel, so people recognize your name. And if you've been lucky enough to get into the New Yorker or something, then, you know, people do recognize your name, and so that's one reason that the publisher would probably buy it, and that's what I recommend for everybody to be published in magazines and newspapers in any way you can before you write a book. Just rack up some publishing credits, because it makes it much easier to sell.
And good ones, too. I mean,
right.
it seems that, you know, you really want to get into the top.
Oh, yeah, you really do.
Which is so difficult.
It probably is, but I do know people who just keep at it.
Sure.
Keep at it and keep at it, and eventually They do it.
Yeah. I heard from a friend today who is a very talented fiction writer, and she was so excited to get rejections from Esquire and the Missouri Review with notes.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's interesting because it is exciting because, you know, she's sort of gotten beyond the form rejection to where they're saying, you know, this one isn't right, but, you know, you're a wonderful writer.
Right. Yeah, I know.
It's encouraging.
It is. And it is... A writer cannot only be talented, they have to have that stick-to-itiveness, too, where rejection after rejection after rejection, they have to keep on going. And that's hard, because I was a writer before I was an agent, and I've written 3 books that were published, and I've done a lot of newspaper magazine writing, and I remember that. The rejections can just make you never want to write again, and you have to get up and brush yourself off and go at it again. It's not easy.
Earlier you mentioned titles. You were talking about that book that has been doing well since 1994,
right.
And that it had a really great title. How important are titles?
Terribly important. I think probably one of the most important things. I mean, you just have to have a great title because it makes people sit up and take notice. Really, I think it's one of the most important things.
Titles didn't used to have subtitles the way they do today. Have you noticed that? It seems like just about every nonfiction book has a subtitle.
That's true. I hadn't thought about that, but yeah, they do. They all seem to have subtitles, probably so that will make somebody pick it up. I suppose it's just another way to show what the book's about.
And then you wonder how important the subtitle is, and if people are reading them or, you know, noticing them. It's really, or the cover art. How important is that?
It's really important because, you know, there's so many books sold a year, and how is yours going to stand out from the rest? You don't have any control over the cover. I mean, you can have a cover consult, but nobody gives you control over it. The publishers have learned long ago not to do that because it just gets into a wrestling match. So, but if you absolutely hate the cover, they will usually do something about it. I mean, you don't have to live with a cover you absolutely hate.
Mm-hmm.
But that would be up to the agent to make them, you know, come around and see the author's point of view. I mean, I have not liked a cover once in a while. Usually I love the covers, but there have been a couple I haven't liked, and I just push them to do something else, and they have, if you make enough noise, I guess. But, yeah, I think a cover is really important. I think anything that makes the book stand out, because, you know what it's like. You go into a bookstore confronted with thousands of books. Why would you pick this one over the other?
Yeah. Well, speaking of bookstores, what about independent bookstores? What's your opinion of the indies? Are they, you know, I hear of them closing. This one's closing or that one's closing.
No, they have a hard time staying open. We have a couple of really good ones here in Del Mar, but it's, I wonder how long they seem to do well. But I love independent bookstores because, you know, you get to know the people who run it and who work there, and you can ask them about books and, you know, which ones to read. And I mean, in a big Barnes and Noble, you can't do that, or in a Borders, it's just like very impersonal. So I love independents, and I think it's really sad when I see them close.
You're listening to Writers on Writing. I'm with Julie Castiglia, who is a literary agent in Del Mar. In terms of people getting in contact with you, obviously it's different. If you're writing a novel, you want the writer to have finished the novel and send you a query letter in a couple of pages, or not even a couple of pages, just a query?
Well, for novels, I really do like a couple of pages of writing, because it's all about the writing. So, I mean, that's what I want. That's what I ask for now, a query letter with a couple of pages of writing. That's the initial look that I want to have. And then from then on, we'll probably ask for the complete manuscript if we like the look of it, of the writing.
And nonfiction?
I mean, they can send a synopsis, too, with it, mm-hmm. if they want to. Nonfiction, we just ask for a query. Mm-hmm. So in that query letter, you put, you know, your expertise plus, you know, what a short paragraph about what the book is about.
What determines whether a book is published in hardcover or trade paperback? What? For fiction or nonfiction? How does the publisher determine, you know, this one is going to be a trade paperback, and it's going to,
the agent determines some of that, because you send it to a hardcover publisher or a softcover publisher. I mean, sometimes publishers that you send, an imprint does do both, but sometimes it doesn't. And you know the ones they do and the ones they don't. For instance, Chick Lit is usually trade paper. That's just the way it is. Mm-hmm. Literary is usually hardcover. And I don't know what determines that or why they do it, but it used to be that hardcover was reviewed more often, but now I see a lot of trade paperbacks being reviewed, and even Mass Market gets reviewed in Publishers Weekly. So I'm not sure Mass Market gets reviewed in all of the places that a hardcover would. Like, I don't think Kirkus would review it. But hardcover... I don't know anymore what the difference is, because usually they go into trade paper after the first year.
Mm-hmm.
So they only have that year of selling hardcover and getting those great royalties. And I suppose if it really takes off and becomes a bestseller, they'll keep it in hardcover much longer.
Mm-hmm.
But normally it's after a year it'll go into the trade paper.
Chick Lit. Now, I've heard other sort of categories. For instance, Hen Lit. I mean,
Lad Lit.
Lad Lit and some terms that maybe we shouldn't say on the radio. But you know, is that the case? I mean, what about older readers? What about women who do not want to read, you know, about 20 and 30 year olds? They want to read about older women.
And they read literary novels like I do. I don't, you know, I think that some of the chicklets rise above a little bit. I mean, mm-hmm. they and that's what I've been reading, that's what they want now. They want them to be deeper and have more going on. That's what they're kind of looking for right now. They don't want the very shallow kind of, you know, Jimmy Choo shoes and labels and all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. They're kind of through with that, I think.
I've had a few authors on my show. Mary Castillo, and who's a new author. She writes Latina Chick Lit, and she's a wonderful writer. And Judy Ryan Hendricks, who writes I wouldn't necessarily think of as chick lit. When I asked her what category she feels she's writing in, she said, "Well, I like to think of it as chick lit." And I found that really interesting, because to me, her stuff is more literary. And you know, and this has been a while, so I'm very curious about that genre. You know, because,
well, I think there's a lot of crossover now. There didn't used to be, but I think that literary and commercial, a lot of times it's hard to tell, and I think probably that's the best book to have, is a literary novel that's also very commercial. It depends upon the writing, I think, but mostly. I mean, if a chick lit is brilliantly written, then it can cross over into that other category. A lot of them are not particularly well written. You know, they're just kind of silly. But some of them are, you know, really, really well written, and those people will go on writing long beyond the chick lit phase. They will just keep writing women's fiction, and women's fiction is what I like to read. So hopefully a lot of those people will, you know, will move on beyond the trendy chiclety thing. And I think sometimes they just call them chiclet because they think they're going to sell
mm-hmm.
better.
Hmm.
Really, it's just a book that appeals to women. I mean, a lot of them, like you said, are very young, but some of them are not.
Mm-hmm. Hmm.
They've gone beyond that, I think, at this point.
Yeah. It's interesting. You know, just it seems like, you know, you have to, what you write has to be categorized. You have to know, you know, where it's going to go in the bookstore.
Yep.
And it's all, it can be a puzzle, I think, to someone who's never been published.
And I know it is a puzzle. And I know when, you know, new writers come to me and they have so many misconceptions. They don't understand it at all. And when I tell them some things, they just absolutely do not want to hear it. I mean, you know, it's a very strange business. it is. It's just strange. And you know, I mean, if you get one offer on a book from an agent's point of view here, if you get one offer on a book, you don't have that much power because they're going to make you an offer and you're going to try to get more money, but you don't have any power. You mm-hmm. have an auction, and it's just crazy because, you know, they're just pushing each other up and up and up and up, and you're thinking, well, that other book I sold the other day with one offer was, you know, that should be the book that's getting all this money, and it's just odd. I mean, you know, it's just a very odd business. There's no rules. There's no, oh, this is the way it is. Every time I sell a book, and Betsy Amster, you know, she's your agent, whenever we talk, we have to say that we have to reinvent ourselves every time, because every time you sell a book, it's a different scenario. It's nothing like it was before. It's mm-hmm. completely different. It's something new. It's a very odd business to be in. Somewhat exciting, I suppose, in a way. But
oh, dear. You are listening to Writers on Writing, and I'm with Julie Castiglia, who is a literary agent in Del Mar. A while ago, I think during the first half, you talked about, you know, an author getting a lot of money for a book, and then, you know, that doesn't sell well. And then, of course, there are books that you don't get much money for that sell really well. The authors that get the money, that get a lot of money for a book and that doesn't sell well, what about then their next book?
What happens to them? Well, normally it's very hard to sell the next book because the first thing they ask you, the very first thing when you're trying to sell the next book is, what were the numbers on the first book? It's the first thing they ask you. And they can look it up themselves now because on BookScan, all the editors go there and it tells you exactly how many copies a book has sold. So there's no fudging. I mean, that's just the way it is. And it is difficult, but I have been able to do it sometimes. I mean, I had a book, I won't mention names, but I sold a book for $175,000 and it didn't sell well. And he came to me with another book and I said, it's going to be hard to sell this because of the other book didn't do well, but I'll see what I can do. So the publisher who I had sold that first book to didn't want it. So I went somewhere else with it, ended up having an auction and getting $350,000 for the next book.
How did that happen?
The next book didn't sell very well either. And so when he came to me with his last book, which has recently been published, I did sell it to the same publisher who published his second book, but I didn't get quite as much. I think I got $250,000 that time. So it does... It does happen, but it only happens if the author has some fantastic idea. This is nonfiction. His were nonfiction. And it only happens if he can come up with a better idea than he had for the first one. And, you know, he's a really good writer, which this guy is, fantastic writer. And he just came up with a terrific idea for the second one, and that's probably why I sold it. Plus, it had a much wider audience than the first one. It was obvious that it had a much wider audience. And I sent him to New York, too, that second time, and he met with all the editors. I had six people in that auction, and the first publisher didn't want it. So that was pretty amazing. But I think that's what you have to do. Again, you have to reinvent yourself like agents do, and you have to say, okay, I'm going to come up with something way more marketable the second time. And you know, it's going to be brilliant. And then you can sell it. But if you come up with just a dull idea the second time, you know, it's not going to work. And I have people come to me, new clients to me, who have books that maybe have sold kind of medium well, but not terribly well. And somehow I've managed to get them, you know, really large advances. And I think it's because I probably wouldn't have taken them on otherwise. They have a great idea for this book. And this book seems to me to be really, really marketable. And they do have good credentials. So, you know, I have managed to do that. But sometimes I wonder how, but I have.
Well, it sounds like maybe there's still a little bit of sort of nurturing the author going on, too, where you used to hear this all the time that publishers would stick with authors through numerous books as they built their readership. And maybe, does it still go on maybe a little bit?
It does go on, I think, with fiction writers, and it does go on if they haven't given them a huge advance. And I think then that's why I think sometimes it's better not to get a huge advance for your first book. So you can earn out, make some royalties, the publisher's made some money, and they're happy with you. So, you know, it isn't always the best thing in the world to get six figures and then never be able to write another book. I mean, you might as well just start off slow and then build up. And, they will. They will nurture authors for a while, I think. So they still do that. I think it has a lot to do with the editor. If the editor loves the writing and loves the book and really feels that this author needs a breakout book and they're going to have one eventually, they will nurture them, but they won't give them huge advances.
So have you ever heard of anybody turning down an advance because... or saying, you know, I don't want that much money?
Well, I did sell a book where I had two people in a small auction kind of scenario, and one publisher offered $140,000, the other one offered $80,000, and he went with the one that offered $80,000 because he liked he talked to both editors, he liked the editor, he'd heard too much about the other person who offered the $140,000, and he didn't want to go with them, so he chose to take the $80,000.
Makes sense.
Looking back, though, we're wondering why we did it, because you know, the book didn't do as well as he hoped, and maybe with the other person, even though the other person has a wild reputation. He or she, and I'm going to say who it is, really gets the books out and manages to have a lot of bestsellers. So who knows? But a lot of things in hindsight you can see that you may not have seen at the time. And if authors really, really want something, like they want this publisher who's very prestigious rather than the one who's offering more money, you have to honor what they want. I mean, I wouldn't push them to take more money if they really didn't want to. So that's what happened in that case.
Interesting. Before we go, do you want to say how people can get in touch with you?
No.
Just know that she's Julie Castiglia.
No, it's pretty easy to get in touch with me, actually. I have my website's on publishersmarketplace.com,
yes,
and everything's on there, the address, telephone number, everything.
Okay.
But I think it would be good for me to say right now, I prefer not to be called on the phone because I'm so busy and, you know, I want the phone left open for emergencies and urgent calls. So potential authors should really just send a letter. That we'd much prefer it that way.
Well, and the other thing is that it does begin with the writing.
Absolutely. And I tell them that all the time. You know, people beg to meet me. They call me up. Oh, I want to meet you. Can we have lunch? And I say no, because it's not about me liking you. You know, I might fall in love with you, but that isn't what I need. I need to fall in love with the writing. And it's the business of words on paper. And until the internet takes over, so that's what is going to remain. So I really think that it's all in the writing.
Well, You know, another quick question. Well, actually, we have a couple of minutes, but the writing you've mentioned a few times, you know, strong writing will find a publisher and a strong voice and all of that. What about plot? Now, in literary fiction, it seems that plot may be a bit less important, but it still is important.
Well, it's really important to have the story written, you know, so that it's very readable and that there's a focus and there's a reason for writing this beautiful sentence. And I must tell you that I've had both ways happen. I've had brilliant writers who absolutely can never get the story right. And I've had beautiful, fantastic stories badly written. And I think the easiest thing to fix is the one that probably can't write the story. But what I usually do, if the writing is so compelling, I tell them they should get an editor to help them organize the book, because they don't ever seem to be able to do it themselves. And I can give them some guidelines, but I don't have the time to, you know, completely edit and again and again. So there are some people I work with who do that, and they have helped a couple of books of mine. Definitely helped them to the point where they're publishable.
Interesting.
So, but yeah, there's often that problem, you know, one or the other. So to have both is a wonderful thing. And I have a book that came in recently that has both. It's seamless in both the writing and the story. The story's fantastic. So that's the kind of thing you wait for years, you know, a book like that. So nice when you have it.
What keeps you going as an agent?
What I just... You know, a lot of times I feel like, okay, I've done it many years. It's time for me to forget it and do something else. But then I get a book in that I just fall in love with and know right away I'm going to sell it. I mean, I just know it. It's something deep in my gut I know. And when that happens, it's worth every minute of it. And it's nice to see... first-time writers, you know, first-time fiction writers. This is the first novel that I just recently received, and it's just, you know, it's fantastic, and you don't see many like that. And she's got all the right credentials. You know, she's won awards all over the place for her writing, and this is her first book, but the book itself, parts of the book have won, has won prizes, and that's what people should do. They should really try to get some good, you know, publishing awards or, you know, like we said before, published in really, you know, slick magazines. And then you've got something to back up the writing. And when you're trying to sell it, it's good to have those things.
Yes. Well, thank you so much again for coming on. It's always a delight to talk to you.
Well, I hope I helped. I hope I gave some information that will help writers.
You're great, and I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thanks, Barbara.
You're welcome. That was Julie Castiglia. She's a literary agent in Del Mar, north of San Diego. What else? We're at the end of our time again, and... it always seems to come too soon. But if you want to know more about the show, you can go to my website, Pen on Fire, at penonfire.com. And there you can email me, or you can just email me directly at penonfire@earthlink.net. And let me know if you want to be on the email list that I send out every week saying who's going to be on the show. And if there's certain guests you'd love to see on here, I'd love to hear that too. I'm going to go now, but first I'm going to leave you with a quote by Willa Cather, who said, "Most of the basic material a writer works with is acquired before the age of 15. Thank you again for listening to Writers on Writing on 88.9 FM KUCI. I'm Barbara DeMarco Barrett. Until next week.
And here's to my lost you, and here's to where it went, and here's to all my old friends and the good times that we spent. Things will never be like they were back then. Don't you know you can't go home again? You can't go home again. And I once was a child on a summer's day, running with the wind, laughing all the way. And deep within my heart, someone says, hey friend, don't you know you can't go home again? You can't go home again. And I guess I've outlasted all my goals, and all my dreams are fading fast. I'm right down at the end of the rainbow. There's an old and tinted photograph of me when I was young, 1963. Back when I was sure the sun was shining just for me, and it will never shine like it did back then. Don't you know you can't go home again? You can't go home again. I guess I've outlasted all my heroes, and all my dreams are fading fast. And right down at the end of the rainbow, there's an old and tinted photograph of me and my lost you, and me and my old dad, me and all my old friends, and the good times that we had. Friends will never be like they were back then. Don't you know you can't go home again? And you can't go home again.